Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. I am your host, Justin Worsham. Happy New Year, everybody. Holy ballsack. It is 2018. I'm knocking on the door of 39. I am not afraid. I am not worried about this. I don't know about you. I recently had a conversation with a friend of mine, Kevin, on the other podcast that I do with him. It's called Gamerland, if you haven't heard of it. It's a great game or a great video game podcast. Done by a couple of old guys with kids. But he turned 40 and he was telling me that he was worried about it. And I don't think he was necessarily worried about aging, just not looking forward to it. And I feel like 40 is a big part of growing up, which is why I'm going to spend this first segment. I haven't done this. I don't think I did it last year, but I try every January with the new year to kind of do a state of the podcast, like, What's going on? What is the plan here? And I think it's more of an opportunity for me to just to get things off of my own chest that kind of mull through my head, and which is mostly what you are thinking while you're listening to this. And I know I've said that before, where I don't know that that's necessarily a good thing. We'll just have to wait and see. But I like aging. I like getting old. I am feeling like 40 is the time where it's like, okay, now you got to kind of grow up. I'm knocking on the door of giving up on this idea. I don't know if you can relate to this, but I feel like at 40, I've done comedy. I've done pretty much most. I've been very fortunate. Let me first say that. I've been very fortunate in that we've been able to make adjustments, and I've got a great wife who is okay with me taking these risks. And I've had pretty much always had a job that I wanted to have, if that makes sense. I started off in... The first job I had was a paper route. That was my dad's idea. Did that for 8 years. And then I worked at like a video store, a fast food chicken place called Foster Farms Chicken, where I grew up. They had fast food chicken of the Foster Farms chicken that you guys all get in your supermarket, because like the butcher was near there and it's delicious. It's Natalie's favorite thing. They since have closed them down, but there's a place called Chicken Barn. If you're ever in the Modesto area and want some good fried chicken, go to Chicken Barn. It really is good. Not like good in the sense of like, you know, like a soul food good, but just good quality fast food fried chicken. It's good stuff. And then what did I do? I worked at the video store. Then I got the job at the theme park. I think the theme park actually was before the video store. I was a Star Trek character. Then I hosted Nickelodeon shows. And then I did that on the road for a little bit. And then I had that touring manager job where I went around the country doing hip hop shows about Newton's three laws of motion. And then I ended up in LA and did some acting, and then I fell into stand up, and then I got bummed out, like I've said, about being on the road all the time. Although I miss the show part. I miss a lot of the people in the comedy clubs that I got to know. I feel like those, I think about them all the time. I was just thinking I need to book Heather Jones the other day, because, and Steve King, those are both people who happen to be from Omaha. It was one of my favorite places to go. Anyway, point is, I feel like I've done all this stuff. I tried the radio thing and it was going great. And then it didn't work out. It didn't work out the way I'd hoped. And it's because as many of you know, but I am ignorant to this, not because I think I'm better, but because just the way my life path went, is that I've been self-employed pretty much, or a freelancer or whatever, for the majority of my life. And so, you know, I was doing this thing and I thought it was working. And then the person in charge said, you know, I don't like it, and then took it away. And maybe I misstepped. Maybe I should have just stayed there and waited for things to change back. I don't know. I'm not very good. I'm good at looking back and kind of thinking, what is there anything I could have done differently? But I'm kind of an onward and upward kind of person, although it's not always upward. Let's be honest. Right. So my point of all this is that I don't know how much longer. I'm hitting 40. I feel like 40. My dad always said, he said it on this show, that, you know, whatever your pacing is in your 40s, or your lifestyle is a better way of putting it. Wherever your lifestyle is at in your 40s, that's pretty much how it's going to be until when you retire, is the idea. That was his barometer. So if you got things going and you're cooking, you know, pretty good, you hit hiccups. Trust me, he hit lots of hiccups. I'm not talking about a valley. I'm talking about overall. And I keep bouncing back and forth because I've changed jobs a lot. I've changed direction a lot to kind of pursue fulfillment, happiness. And if you're the person who has just had a job and it's just a job that you did, maybe you didn't hate it, but you didn't love it. It wasn't something that you dreamed of doing when you were growing up. I can tell you, having been the person who's done what could be called the other side of that and not had, a discovery or anything, amazing happen, is I think we both end up kind of looking at it the same way, where I'm sure if you're sitting there going, asshole, you just talked about how you traveled around telling jokes and hosted Nickelodeon shows and stuff, and now you're kind of like, man, I wonder if I did it wrong. You do. I got to be honest. You got to sit here and think. And that's really got me thinking. I've said on this episode that the one thing I do feel like I was destined to be, if there is a way to put it, is a father, a husband and a father. The thing that I always come back to is being a husband and a father. And since then, since the stand-up thing where it was traveling was kind of rough, being gone so many weeks, got in the way of the thing that was most important to me, I thought, well, I'll try and figure out another way. And I think the new path right now is going to be this show. And that's the state of the podcast, is that in the year, I can't walk away. I don't know if I'm supposed to be this honest, but I'll be honest. I make about $200 a month off the show, if that. More often than not, it's closer to 100. And I think that will improve, but I got to put more energy into this. And if I the reason I want to say this, I know that when I do these solo episodes, I get a little maudlin. I hate it. Trust me. I hate getting melodramatic. I wish I could be loosey goosey and fun, but it's just the stuff that I think of, and it helps me to say it to you, to get it off my chest, because I feel like this is a conversation, as silly as that sounds. Because what you don't know is that even in my personal life, you barely get a word in edgewise if you're around me. But I want this to be a gig if I can make it. I don't need to be rich. I don't need to be Adam Carolla. I don't need to make millions. I just need to make enough money to pay my bills and take care of my family and play with my kids. And I think that's what we're all fighting for, right? And it's to me, that has been the kind of the challenging part of parenting and being a husband, is that how do you, sometimes your personal life, right? Sometimes your personal life can be so good that you naturally kind of take it for granted and you focus more on, say, your career. And then you get, you spend so much of your time thinking about your career that you kind of have to stop and go, yeah, but my family. And I'm not that guy, like, it always drives me nuts, the family movies where dad is out killing it, making the bacon and doing amazing. And the bitch is that dad works too much. That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm not talking about working too much. I think that they're like anything in life. There's ebbs and flows, right? Everybody's going to have naturally busy times in their life where they're going to have to focus on their job, and then there's times where you're not going to have to focus so hard on your job. It's not about on or off. The life is constantly in the gray, in my opinion, and I have by no means mastered life. But I do know that people like this show because there are parts of whatever it is that I'm experiencing or going through that you can relate to. So I can't help but imagine that you have some facet of this going on in your life. Even if you're a stay-at-home parent, we always look at the grass as greener, right? Like, for the longest time, I thought, I joked, I said, it'd be so great to be able to work full-time. And then I went and got a full-time job, and I had a full-time job where I could still take care of the kids and be home with them. And then now I have a full-time job where it's closer to 9 to 6, even though I'm back to part-time. And I miss my old life. And so if there's something that maybe you can glean from this, if there's any way that I can help you, not in a advice or tell you what to do or heavy-handed up on a high horse way, but in just in a way of a friend who has seen a different side, is that I could tell you is that whatever it is you think is better. My dad said this when I first broke up with Natalie and thought I was going to meet this other chick. And he said that, you think that it's going to be different, but after a few years, you realize you have the same problems with this new person that you had with the other person. And I think I've learned that in kind of life and job. So maybe if you're listening to this, maybe you're not even going through this right now in your life. But I think we all, there is never a bad time to sit while you're on a treadmill or while you're in the car and just kind of stop and think to yourself, have I told my spouse that I love him? Have I given him enough hugs? Because I think that this whole New Year's resolution thing about losing weight and all that stuff, I don't know. I'm kind of sold on that as bullshit. And it's destined to fail, right? So why not make your New Year's resolution to look at your spouse and hug them a little more and give them a little more kiss or tell them how much you appreciate them? Because I don't really see a downside to that. You know what I mean? But there's a lot of downside and stress to trying to lose weight and eating less stress. I'm a guy who just lost 28 pounds, and it wasn't until it was like laid out for me very strictly. You eat 75% of your plate is vegetables, 25% is animal protein, no carbs, no dairy, one cup of fruit a day, half a cup of nuts a day, no fruit for breakfast or dinner, and have a snack in between breakfast and lunch and lunch and dinner. I think that's pretty much the gist. And half your body weight in ounces of water. And boom, it all worked out for me. And I've been trying for over a decade to lose weight. So, but there was a lot of stress that came with that, right? But how much stress comes from just, I'm not trying to like have a magical vacation because that's bullshit. We just did games over the weekend. Lots of you were posting on social media about how it was funny. I never thought of this, but we all play board games around the holiday and it's fun. We should do it. And we always say we should do it more often than I don't think we ever do, right? But it is fun. But see, people with kids, though, it's different. Depending on the age of your kids, I hope your family didn't go through this, and that's the reason I want to talk about this in the next segment. But when you have games with kids, no matter what you try to do with those magical moments, they always kind of go to shit for at least a little bit. It is a hit and miss. So what I'm saying is that there's a greater chance of success with just as much effort if you dump that money into your spouse or your loved one. And if you are a single parent, and I know there's a lot of you that are listening to that, and maybe you don't have a significant other, and maybe you're listening to this and going, Valentine's Day is more than a month away, fucker. Get all sentimental about your loved one then. Here's what I say. I say that if you are a single parent, you take this exact same message and you apply it to yourself. That the same grace and gratitude that you would give to a spouse, you provide for yourself. Because I've noticed it myself as a father, and I've noticed it even in my wife, who's a great mom. I mean, she fucks up, but we all do. No, I've noticed that you're really hard on yourself. And so why not, if that means that you're going to take a night and you're just going to have a bubble bath and you're going to tell the kids, nope, not going to happen, or you're going to do a date night, and you're going to go see a movie that's going to make you laugh. And if you don't have buddies to go see the movie with, just go by yourself. Fuck it. I'm telling you, it's not that bad. I went on the road a lot and it's fun. Say, fuck it. Do what you want to do. Just kind of take 5 minutes and just kind of think and breathe and focus in on you because you've earned it. But the reason I'm going on all this, diatribe and getting all tangential, because A, it's how I talk, obviously, this. And B, is I want this to be my gig if I can. I think as hard as it is for me to accept, I think it helps people, to be honest. I got an amazing phone call from, I'm sorry, I'm going to use your name because I've just realized she also listens to the show, but I got an amazing phone call today from Nancy while I was at work. She's a lovely woman who heard me talk about the advertisements I do for Next Advanced Medicine and how they help my dad with his diabetes. And then we talked at a seminar, and this woman took time out of her day to track down my work phone number and call me at work just so she could thank me for my influence on her life. And it's really hard for me to kind of think of it this way, to see that I've done something to impact someone else's life. That's honestly, it's hard for me to process. So if I have, and this applies to you as well, know that it is such a big deal to me that it's impossible for me to understand. That's the God's honest truth. And know that if you ever reach out to me, I respond to every email. And if I didn't, it's because I missed it and I was in the middle of something. But I read them. I read all the emails. I read them all. And they really do charge my batteries. So why am I saying all this? I'm saying all this because I want this to be my gig. But there's a part of my wiring that makes it hard because I'm always going to have that doubt in my head. Like, do people really want this? I've had this show where I realized I've been doing the show for damn near 10 years. And if you invest 10 years into something, right, and you're making $100 a month, at what point are you just being selfish and blowhardy? Now, granted, it's not 40 hours a week, 10 years. And that's what I'm trying to do. I want to see what happens because it doesn't look like radio is for Justin. It does not look like they're interested in what I'm selling. So that means I got to go build it on my own. And luckily, I live in a time where that's possible. So the reason I say all this to you is that as hard as I want you to know that I lean on you. I lean on you for feedback. I lean on you for validation. I don't want to say I'm an insecure person. I used to think I was. But as of late, I've kind of realized that I'm not. But I don't know how to say it, but those emails, they mean the world to me, but I don't like asking for them. That's the hard part because it makes them feel contrived. So what I'm really trying to do is say that I appreciate them immensely. But I feel like sometimes I change this show around too much, but I also think that that's kind of me overthinking it because I feel like the show hasn't quite hit what it needs to be or what I want it to be, maybe is a better way to put it. And it's a weird dichotomy. I've talked about this before with Bo Burnham and his Make Happy. The ending of that stand-up special is very, very interesting from the perspective of a guy who used to tell jokes for a living because it's a real good look inside the psyche of a comedian in that it's a very interesting dynamic. If I sit here and try to think of what it is that you want to hear in this show, and that's all I think about, the chances of me hitting the mark are slim to none. That's just from experience. But if I think about what I think, what feels good right for me, then it'll naturally, I think you'll find it much more enjoyable and it'll actually attract more people. So I want you to know that that's what I'm going to try and do in the new year. And right now, I think I want the show to be something kind of like this to a certain extent, where this first segment in the show, I want it to be, you know, whatever's going on in my life. One of the things I saw from the feedback is a lot of you had asked to hear more stories about my kids and my life as a parent, which is a really funny thing because it made me kind of go, oh, no, duh, shit. But I stopped kind of bringing that stuff up because, A, it's harder to mine comedy out of kids that are in my age because I'm in kind of the middle boring years of parenting where it's pretty easy, it's pretty chill, and there's little frustrations, but they're not real problems. But I thought, honestly, people are tired of hearing about my kids. That's what I thought. But what I realize when I enjoy things, and just like what Nancy did for me, when somebody impacts me, it's important to me that I go to them and I say thank you for what you've done to the point where sometimes I think I make them feel uncomfortable. And it's such a sad part about our interactions if that's how we're truly wired. But yeah, so I rely on your feedback, and I want to have like an opening segment where it's a little bit of like a monologue. This is what's going on. And if I have a guest, we'll talk about whatever's going on. The second segment will be something that's a little bit more planned. Maybe it's something that you didn't know or like what I'm about to go to here, or maybe I don't want to say the word bits, but I want to try to create a format where the show can be funny. I think that's the big part that's kind of missing, to be honest. And if you have any thoughts, again, feel free. You could go to thedadpodcast.com. There's a link where you could take a survey. There's a Survey Monkey. I'll probably send out another one in another 6 months or something like that. But feel free to send me an email, show@thedadpodcast.com. Send me a message at the Facebook page, .com/dadpodcast. You could tweet me, all that stuff. I check it all out. And just know that when I change something, it's because something in my stomach says, that's what I should do. And it usually takes at least 4 to 5 people giving me some kind of feedback to say, you know, hey, this is something I feel. This is what I think in listening to the show. This is what I like. This is what I don't like. or whatever. But what I find interesting is as afraid as I am of asking this question and leaving it open-ended for fear that the criticism will be too much for me to handle, is that more often than not, what I honestly get is you guys going, this is the stuff that I like, keep doing more of this stuff, you know, and very rarely do I get negative feedback. And so I think what we're really talking about here is my own bullshit that I need to move past. So that's the plan moving forward. The podcast is going well. The numbers, I got to get much, much higher if I'm going to make a go at this, and I could do more for it. If the more, and I know it's not about, I'm not trying to suck money off you guys, and that's how I feel when I say it. I feel like, 'cause I know we got advertising and stuff like that, but it's a thing where, think of it in this way, is that if I'm making more than just $100 a month, right? Like let's say I'm making 1,000, then that's 10 times more time that I can devote. Not because all of a sudden the listeners have shown that they need me, but none of that bullshit. And you probably don't see it that way. That's probably my own head, but it's that I can justify it. I could justify taking time away from things that pay my bills for my family and put it into doing something like this, because I really want to build this into something. I want to have merchandise. I want to do coffee mugs. I want to do t-shirts. Nothing would make me happier. My new goal is that if hopefully, and maybe it'll take 2 years, 5 years of the internet, things can happen fast. But my new goal is I want to get this show to a point where we could go on a fucking cruise together. I think that would be so much fun. You know what I mean? Like just to take a trip, even if it's just a weekend thing. And that's one of the things I was so jealous about, the sanity check that the Naptime radio ladies had. I love that idea. And the downsides to me not traveling anymore is that I don't get to interact with a lot of you guys. Like I don't get to come by and have a chat. One of my fondest memories on the road was I had this young married couple who took a vacation. It was one of the most flattering things in the world. They took a vacation to San Antonio, partially to go see the Riverwalk. And maybe I'm blowing it out of proportion to how much they wanted to see me. But the other big part of it was just so they could see me. They wanted to see me do stand-up. And then they came to the show. And then these poor assholes, they came to the show. And I said, okay, well, what are we doing? I offered to buy them a drink or something. And then they're like, and then they didn't drink. So we ended up going to a Starbucks and just hanging out and talking for, I think, at least a couple hours, if not just an hour. And I had a great time. But the little voice in my head is sitting there going, well, I pounced this on them. They did not want to go hang out with me. And I say all this not because I want you to feel sorry for me. I say all this because I want you to understand me. And hopefully it'll help make sense if I do things, if I change things or why I do things or any of that stuff. And I think that's it. So all I would like to ask is in the next year is if you could, you know, give me that feedback. If there's something, if you start to hit that point where you're like, I can't listen to this anymore, or you feel like it's just not what it used to be, feel free to shoot me an email. And also I would like to ask that you give me the grace that if I can't or don't incorporate your feedback, that there's a reason why. I'm pretty transparent. I can't think of a reason why I wouldn't just tell you, but I may not address all of those on the show. All right. So let's take a quick break. I'm going to come back. And I want to talk to you about the revelation that I had today. And I'm going to talk about it hopefully this week on the Gary and Shannon Show when I do my parenting segment. We'll talk more about that right after this. Hey, speaking of supporting the show, if you want to support the show, go to thedadpodcast.com, click on our Amazon banner, click that link. You know the drill. If you've already heard this, then you're like, blah, blah, blah. But if you haven't, I'm telling you, it makes a difference. If you just click on that, now it's you don't even have to try to support the show. We have sponsors, and there's even more coming down the pike. Sponsors, you go support, right? Those you got to support, because if they don't see a return on their investment, then they'll probably pull out, okay? But Amazon, we all are already going there, and it's no more effort. Once you take that 10 seconds to bookmark the Amazon link that you get from that banner at thedadpodcast.com, every time you go to Amazon after that, all they do is give me a little taste of whatever it is you buy. Costs you nothing, helps the show tremendously. We'll be right back. So over the holiday, I mentioned it that we were playing board games, like I'm sure many of you were. And I had this huge realization. See, I've always been the guy who, you know, when you hear about participation trophies, right? And them not keeping score with Little League games and little soccer games and stuff like that. I've always been the guy who always felt like the old angry Republican, like who's just like, well, if you do that, but I could never quite put my finger on why it is that it bothered me, right? I don't know if you've had that where you get that feeling. It's like, I just don't like this, but I can't quite articulate why yet. And all of a sudden, thanks to my son, this all clicked together for me over the holiday. And a big part of it, I've been waiting to kind of have an episode where I was going to be by myself because I want to talk about this other thing. Is I did this episode, stand-up show. Jamie Kaler has this great idea for a stand-up show. I'm hoping we could do more of them together. He's going to be on the show. He's got a great podcast called Father Time, and not Father Time, just Father Time. And he's a funny guy, and he had me do this show, and part of the show was at the end of the show, all of the comedians come up, it's four parents, and then we kind of do like a panel where we ask questions of the audience or they ask us. And there was a guy in the middle of the crowd who said, you know, Jamie asked him, like, what do you stress about parenting, or is there anything that you are concerned about, insecure about, maybe is a better way to put it. And the guy said, I just feel like I yell too much. And that was another one of those things, like the participation trophy, that it irked me. And I stopped and go, hold on, no. Like, let's all back off. Now, let me make it clear, okay? I don't think we should all be screaming at our kids and cursing at them constantly. And I don't think any of you are thinking that I'm saying that, right? I think that the people who worry about that stuff, right? Think about anything else. Let's take it away from parenting. Right. Think about you know how you have like an acquaintance, you know, not quite a really close friend, but they're a friend. Right. And they're always coming. They want to borrow your shit, say. And they're the ones who always borrow your shit. And they, you know, they don't return it right away. You got to go ask them for it and all that stuff. Those are the people who don't worry about that. And therefore, they're the ones who should. But I have another, like one of my neighbors, right, who lives right next door to me. He's big time into tools. He's a car guy, and he's big time into his stuff. And so if you borrow something, he's a lot like my dad was when I was a kid. It's like if you use the tools, if I was doing a brake job on my GMC Jimmy when I was 17 years old, 16 years old, and I didn't put one of his open-ended wrenches back in the exact same order that it was in, he would jump up my ass because he's like, you don't appreciate using my shit because it's not your shit. So when you're using my shit, you got to treat my shit like it's not your shit. That's very important. And so I always worry about that with that neighbor. I want to make sure that I don't nick anything or mess anything up. He's, you know, he's worried about that stuff. And so my point is that the people who worry usually aren't the people who have to worry. So if you're worried about yelling at your kid, I mean, I'm not against self-improvement. I mean, I'm sure Rachel would probably disagree with what I'm saying here, but maybe not to a large extent. But we had Dr. Tina Payne Bryson and all the other experts that I've had on the show is that the people who worry are usually people who don't have to worry, right? So when this guy is saying, I don't want to yell at my kids, we've already gotten rid of, like, let's say hitting. Like, maybe you spank your kid. I doubt it. It's probably happened once or twice. That seems to be the trend. I'm not saying it's eliminated. We've all had the story of the time it's happened. But imagine your parents telling the story when they get together with a group of their other parent friends, and they're telling the story, trying to tell the story of the one time they spanked you. Like, what would there be? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that story of the one time that they were abusive. Like, I don't even think they had those conversations, right? I mean, not that they're bad parents. Some of, you know, maybe you had a bad parent. I don't think I had a bad parent. I had a parent who made mistakes, like we all do. But I didn't have a bad parent. And I think just because you have bad parents doesn't mean you automatically become a bad parent. Because if you had bad parents and you're hyper aware of it, then usually you go the other way, right? So my point is that I'm just saying, does it help to stop yelling? I don't know that it helps to stop yelling, to be honest. I really, truly don't. I don't, but in my gut, I feel like it doesn't. That's where I am. I feel like, sure, I'm going to say it out loud. I know that there's research that says otherwise, but I don't think an occasional swat on the ass, I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. If I can, I'm honestly sitting here afraid I'm going to be struck by parental lightning. I don't see it because here's what I think it is. I think that we all do this thing where if I slap my kid once, I might as well be the, you know, old stepdad and the wife beater and the gold chain and the chest hair and the suspenders, in every after school special, who's just angry at the world and taking it out on you. And I can't wrap my mind around that being the case. I had a very interesting Facebook, I want to say, conversation with the listener last time I talked about kind of the mental health awareness stuff and all that. It was similar in tone to what I'm saying here. And they brought up a lot of good points. I don't think they were necessarily talking about themselves, but they were talking about like, well, what if your parent is somebody who's afraid to go outside or is an alcoholic or is just, fatally ill when you're growing up? Like, these are all traumas that, you're right, I don't have that perspective. So, but I'm not going to backpedal entirely on my point, because I think there's validity in saying that we have to have a barometer. And the way that I use the barometer is like, well, how is everything going? You know what I mean? How's it working out so far? Because like I've said on the show before, my grandfather, I don't even think that's technically a generation. I don't know generational math. I'm sorry. I'm still stuck on core math. But he would farm 180 acres of cotton when he was 5 years old with his 9-year-old brother by themselves. That's what he did. And he didn't see that as stressful. He didn't see that as hectic. He didn't see it as overwhelming. He didn't process that. Because why? Because that was his normal. You see what I mean? That was his normal. That was just an expectation. Now, my therapist has said to both my wife and I that children are adaptable to a flaw. And so what I would like to do is just meld those two thoughts together and say that our kids are adaptable, right? But to a flaw, yes. But the flaw means that they could also adapt to extreme abuse and accept that as normal. But again, if you're worried about whether or not you're being abusive, I really feel comfortable saying you're not. You're not. And so I'm okay with you saying, because you do that self-diagnosis, right? Where you have to check in and go, oh, am I yelling too much? Is everybody okay? I think that's fine. Not that you need my validation. I'm just saying this because we're talking about it. And I'll get to a point here in a sec. But I'm saying that you gotta give yourself a little slack in this area. So I don't like the movement of like, now we're not going to yell. And I don't know, maybe it's because of where I fall in the life. I get the not hitting them. And I don't even think it's because of the way things changed that you don't hit your kids anymore. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it does take a societal shift of not yelling. And then when my sons have kids, they're going to be like, why would you raise your voice at a kid? That's just horrible. And then there's going to be people like, well, I'll raise my voice if he's going to touch a stove or run out in traffic. That makes sense. Or if he's going to harm himself, then I'll raise my voice. And then there's going to be people like, wow, listen, he's just stuck in his ways. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not. And here's the thing. I'm not against being aware of feelings and compassionate and preaching sympathy. I'm not against any of that. I'm just against the idea of where we do the right thing, but overcorrect too far, and now we're doing more harm than we are good. That's what I'm against. But you know what I'm for? Very excited about this. Very, very much for this. Sunbaskets. I know that was an abrupt change. It's because I'm new at this, but I got to tell you about these great people. So Sunbaskets, it's like a meal delivery service. So here's the way that I would look at it. You guys know I just came off of this very specific diet, right? And where it was very, very limited. Sunbaskets is sustainable, organic produce, They got organic pasture raised eggs, non-GMO tofu. They make their own sauces. You can have a sauce that you make yourself. So you get all of the ingredients, all farm to table stuff, right? So, and they have tons of options. They have like a paleo option. They have gluten-free options. They even have healthy options for, they would call lean and clean, a vegan, vegetarian, Mediterranean. There's a tons. So it's not just like, hey, everybody is getting the same four options. No, 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 no. They have 18 recipes that you choose from each week, and they suggest them based on whatever it is that your diet, if you want. So here's why I love this idea is because if you're like me and you're the guy who makes the meals, right? Just imagine knowing that, say, 3 days a week, you know that your kids and your family are going to eat a healthy meal where you don't got to worry about going to the grocery store. You don't got to worry about, oh, do I have time? Do I need time? Should I get fresh time? No, it all comes delivered to your door from Sunbaskets, all pre-measured and everything. They give you the recipe. And what the kicker is, you get the recipe and you can make it again if you love it so much and everybody loves it. Then you throw it in and now you know how to make it. And then you just go to the store and you get the stuff and boom. I'm telling you, this stuff is amazing. And now if you go to sunbaskets.com/dadpodcast today, you get $35 off your first order. I'm going to say it again. sunbaskets.com/dadpodcast, $35 off your first order. sunbaskets.com/dadpodcast, $35 off your next order. I'm stoked. It's amazing. I'm really happy and I'm appreciative that they're here helping support the show. So back to my point of the yelling and why do I think that we're doing more harm than good is because over the holiday we decided to bust out SpongeBob Monopoly and we're playing the game and everybody's having a good time. And a long time ago, Natalie and I had talked about reinstating like a weekly family game night. And we didn't do a very good job of it. And because we realized that the kids needed to learn what it was like to lose because they were getting very competitive with each other and getting very aggressive whenever they would play anything, even just playing like lightsaber fights, say, or whatever. And if one of them wasn't winning, they had an obsession with winning. And this is another one of those, I don't know if you've had these no duh moments in parenting, but it was a no duh. It was, yeah, of course, everybody likes to win. It feels good, right? But everything clicked together for me when we're playing Monopoly and it's just so much fun. It's family fun. We're negotiating. We're trading for properties. But then like any game, it starts to come down. And you know how Monopoly could turn in an instant. And I traded Jack the six-year-old a couple of the yellow properties, which is a mid-level, you know, upper close. It's not quite green on that good expensive side of the board, but it's you know, north of Go. So it's a good part of neighborhood. It's not, you know, the slum lands of the dark purples and the light blues. I'm giving colors just in case anybody has like, I don't feel like anybody plays regular Monopoly anymore. It's always Star Wars or Flintstones Monopoly. But anyway, so the game star, I traded him one of the Boardwalk essential places for the SpongeBob version. It's the Krusty Krab for a couple of yellows. And I gave him a couple $100. It was a good deal. But I thought there's no way this kid is going to get enough money to build this up. And boy, was I wrong. He built all those up to where basically they had a hotel on each one. And so you landed on it and it was lights out for you. And so I think I was Jacob was the first to go down, his older brother. And poor Jacob. Oh, did his heart ache. And here's what's so interesting to me about this. He was crying. And what I found interesting about it was that Jacob is a kid who gets it. He gets a lot of like really heady things like, oh, that's the other thing. I want to wait. I'll tell you more when I have Rachel on. But I had kind of the sex talk with him. And he said something that was like where I said, do any of your friends talk about sex? He was like, no. He goes, if somebody did, the other person would go straight to the principal. And I go, why is that? He goes, I go, has that happened? He goes, no. I said, did somebody tell you that somebody's talking about sex? He goes, no. I said, well, how do you know that? He goes, because parents are really protective about their kids finding out about sex. And he just knew that, like he intuits things. So put that kind of mature brain, like who can get these big concepts, and then put it in the situation of Monopoly where I'm trying to rationalize to him, like, I get the idea of being upset that you're losing and that you're not going to be in the game anymore. I get all of that. But we're talking about a level of upset. Like, how upset do you think is okay to be like. And I'm not trying to tell him he can't be upset. I know that that's important. I don't want to take away his emotions, but I also need him to understand that he can't cry just because he lost at Monopoly. And so I'm trying to give him examples to connect the logic, like I learned from Dr. Tina Payne Bryson in Whole Brain Child, is that I'm trying to connect the irrational emotion, right, that's just he's feeling, to a logic so that he could use the logic to manage his emotion. That's what I learned from there, and I hope I'm doing it right. Otherwise, it's really funny. But anyway, so I said, I go, well, what's going to happen if you would have won the game? Would anything change once we're done with the game? Do you get real money? Do you get a badge of honor? Like, I go, and he goes, well, no. And I said, okay. I said, so why be crazy upset when even if you win, like, it's not that big a deal? And he kind of got it, but he just couldn't shake this emotional feeling. And then I kind of realized that he just has to feel it. And the other thing happened was Jack, the little one, on Christmas Day, they got a bunch of Legos. This was the year of the Legos for us. And Jacob spent like 6 hours building this BB-8. And Jack got another playset. And it was age appropriate. This playset that he had was kind of smaller. And he was getting frustrated with the instructions. And I was trying to tell him, I'm like, dude, when you feel yourself getting frustrated, you got to breathe. You got to calm down. And I'm not kidding. He was throwing a massive fit at the dining room table. Like, one of those fits where you're like, is that my fucking kid? Like, that's bananas, man. And Natalie was like trying to help him, but it felt like every time she tried to help him, it almost threw a log on the fire. And so I said, son, I said, I've told you what I think you should do. I've done everything I can to help you, but you're not listening to me. So therefore, there's nothing I can do for you until you allow your mother or I to help you and behave in an acceptable way. I can't help you. And I'm sorry, but I'm here for you whenever you're ready. But I feel like you just want to feel frustrated right now and you want to get through this. And here's the crazy thing that happened is that I really felt like I was leaving him alone on an island. And I'm not saying that this is a tactic. None of this is me giving you parental advice. I'm just sharing my experience. Okay. In that I felt bad that I was leaving him alone on an island. That's what I'm saying. Like I wasn't actually parenting, but I did a lot of like trying to help him manage the emotion up to this point and it wasn't working. And then what happened was he felt the anger. He felt the frustration. And I think he just kind of realized that it wasn't really helping. It wasn't getting anywhere. And when there was an outside stimulus, he just kind of eased his way through it and then eventually figured it out. And then when he was done, I went back to him and I said, doesn't it feel good that you figured this out and you did it? And he was like, yeah. And I said, okay, so the lesson that we got to learn from this is that when we get upset like that, while it's understandable to get frustrated and upset when things aren't going the way that you would like for them to go, you got to stay calm in order to push through it. And you got to figure out a way to get around it so that you could be like, I did it. It feels good. And you got to have that time of frustration be shorter. You got to work on shortening that time each time was what I kind of talked to him. He tuned out most of it, I'm sure. Hopefully it was white noise that will pop up in his subconscious later. But my point is, he worked it out. So now we got Jacob with the Monopoly. We got Jack with the Legos. Jacob also had some fits with the Legos. And all of a sudden it hit me, especially with Jacob and the Monopoly, is that if we don't let the kids feel loss in a little league game and we just give them a trophy where we always want to make them feel good, right? If it's all about making them feel good, what happens when we're not there? They can't process it. And what I've seen with my own uncle, my own family, he's been very protected his entire life. And now he's, you know, in his 50s. And little things are very hard for him to deal with. And that's what it becomes. So, and then all of a sudden this other light bulb went off in my head. We're seeing increased amounts of stress and anxiety in high school age kids more than ever before. Depression, right? Why is that? I think that we want to say that it's because, well, there's more expected of school and the college and all that stuff. But I don't think that's it. I don't know what you think, but what if it's that the parenting trend has shifted away from being indifferent? I was trying to find a better way to say it. But honestly, I mean, when we were kids, I think our parents were pretty much indifferent to how we felt. And I'm not saying that's the way to go back to. I'm just saying that we've got a tremendous shift. We've talked about it a lot here, is that now you're hyper different. You are hyper obsessed with what's going on with your kid's emotional state. When we were kids, we were borderline ignored and told to shut up, right? And so I think it makes it a little bit easier for us to swallow those negative pills because we've dealt with them from a very early age. And then the next light bulb that went off is the same thing like Dr. J said, is that if when with the pacifier, right? That the pacifier to me feels like the first thing, maybe sleeping in their own bed, in their own room, maybe. But I want to say the pacifier is the first kind of actual manipulative, not manipulative, but you know what I mean? Like tangible thing that you have to take away from a kid. And you have to deal with that emotional, you know, issue and all that stuff. And that if you took that pacifier away from a kid when they're 3 months old, like Dr. J says, because after 3 months, they no longer need to suckle, to satiate, right? That's to suck. So if you took that away, the emotional fight is very different than if you try to take it away from a five-year-old, right? So what if we apply that same logic to negative emotion? I don't know if you're sitting there. The little voice in my head is going, there's so many people sitting in minivans going, well, no shit, Sherlock, but maybe there's at least four of you who are like, holy fuck. Yeah, because it was kind of it's something I kind of knew, but I couldn't articulate it until just then when I saw it. And so that's why I started the episode off by saying, go after your loved one. Tell them how great they are. Worry about that. Because all the other stuff is, to a certain extent, better off taking care of itself. And I'm not saying, you know, go to Vegas and leave the 4 and 6-year-old home alone. Why do I even have to say that? I'm not, you guys aren't dumb, but you get what I'm saying? I don't know if, are you wired the same way where it's like, even when I say that, to say to someone, even myself, to go, I'm just going to worry about my wife. If for me to say that in public, right? Let's say I'm going to take 80% of the energy I spend worrying about my kid's well-being and I'm going to put it on my wife or I'm going to put it on my husband or my partner or whatever. That's a douchey thing to say, partner. Fuck you. Wife or husband. I'm not saying that as in like gay people can't have partners. I'm just saying that it's a douchey. It feels like colored. That's what it feels like to me. And maybe I'm wrong because I'm just a straight white guy. So what the hell do I know? But anyway, tangent. Sorry. But my point is, I'm just going to take 80% of my energy of worrying about the kid and I'm going to focus that on worrying about the other person because I feel like that worry can actually have that focus because more often than not, when you have kids, especially when you got multiple kids, especially when they're younger, you get so tired and you easily and understandably so become so self-absorbed and you're looking for somebody else just to give you something. What if you stop worrying about that kid that you have and you worry about that other person for just a little bit? Because the energy that it takes to take care of your loved one or your significant other is so much less than that kid, right? So much less. And now I feel like, at least me, I can walk forward going, I don't have to worry about if I yell at my kid or if I curse at him. And if you don't want to be that parent, I'm not saying you have to be. I'm not saying you have to get on the bandwagon of what I'm saying because it's not even a bandwagon. The bandwagon that I'm on is about you not feeling bad for yourself. And not in a childish way, but you know what I mean? Feeling bad about yourself that you're a bad parent because you raised your voice or you cursed in front of your kid. Because what that is that a society. That's the man. It is. It's societal pressure. It's external. It's not real. It's not in you. That's not who you are. Because a person who does that shit doesn't actually think or worry about it. That's why they're abusive. They lack the doubt. They lack the second guessing or the ability to go back and apologize. And the other reason is that maybe in the deep down inside, you kind of feel like, I want my kid to feel frustration and pain. And but then everybody's like, why are you being such a dick to your kid? Because it's for their own good. And I think we all need to accept that, right? I think we all need to know that it's not about punishing the kid. It's not that feeling negative emotion isn't a bad thing. It's an exercise. We're teaching them by allowing them to feel those negative thoughts. We're teaching them how to deal with them. And if we shield them, we protect them, we guide them away from mistakes and failure, we're robbing them of the exercise. We're atrophying their muscles to being able to deal with strife and heartache. And what happens is that when they can't handle losing a game at Monopoly, what are they going to do when they lose their job and there's something real at stake? They get depressed. And that's why I think, like I said, the high school kids, because if they can't lose at Monopoly, what are they going to do when they have to take a test that's going to decide what grade they get to enter into college or what college they could get into? How are they going to process that struggle? Some deep shit, Justin. I always hate that. I hate that because I get lost in my point, and then the little Justin in my head goes, "You're such a douche. You sound like such a blowhard." So, I don't know. I hope that helped you in a little bit, but helped you a little bit. But I'm going to take another break and then come back and do a little moment of the week.
You made them. You love them. And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally, they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the Week, brought to you by Dad Gear. All your child traveling needs packed into stylish, practical perfection. Designed by real dads for real dads and moms. Don't be the guy with a diaper purse. Be the man with a Dad Gear diaper backpack. Go to dadgear.com and use promo code DADPODCAST at checkout for 20% savings. Made in the USA.
So many moments happen over the holiday, right? It's kind of like prime moment season. You got the fun times with Santa and the gifts and all that. I'm going to share a moment. Not that you ever listened to the show with little ones, but this is definitely not something to have little ones around, even if you're worried about questionable content. So goodbye, little ones, and don't pester your parents as to why they're turning this off. But I got to be a part of something that I thought was just like, oh, that's cool. And then it became something that was very, very magical. If you want to take a look, it's the Super Hyper Local Sunday is the name of the show on KFI. I'm sure they podcast it. It's on Sundays, 8 to 10 Pacific on KFI AM 640. And it's hosted by Brian Suits, who will eventually be a guest on the show. He's a guy, he's really smart guy, very funny guy. Dark Secret Place is the name of his podcast. If you're into like kind of military news and what's going on in the world of, you know, foreign affairs and stuff like that, he's really, really got his finger on the thumb of the pulse of that stuff. And anyway, so he sent me a text. He was like, "Hey, I need a favor. Can you?" His daughter, he's got a daughter's about Jacob's age. His daughter volunteered. I didn't know this till it was all over. She volunteered to come in on his radio show because he was doing a show Christmas Eve night, 8 to 10. And she volunteered to give updates on Santa from the Santa Tracker. And he talked about the whole story. And if you haven't heard that, it's a really cool story where there was an ad, I believe, that was misprinted. Yeah, it was an ad that was misprinted saying that you could call this hotline for Santa. And the number they put on there was wrong. And it was some hotline to NORAD. And so this guy who's his job is to watch for Russian missiles coming over. All of a sudden he starts getting these people calling in and he pretends to be Santa and finds out about the ad. And then the phone starts just ringing off the hook and he answers all these kids' phone calls as Santa. And then eventually just kind of blew into this whole thing where they started tracking Santa. And that's how the NORAD Santa Tracker was born. So she's going to give updates on Santa. And he asked me to call in as Santa. And so I did. And, if I was better, I would have played it. But essentially, this is why it's part of my moment. Is that you see this sound right here? I'll try to describe. It's just a single strip of leather that has five knots tied in it, and then attached to that are little bells. It's like a little craft shop. There's nothing to this. I'm telling you, there is nothing to this. There's nothing fancy. It's just a single strap of cheap leather and some jingle bells. And when I was about the same age as this little girl, I started to question whether or not Santa was real. Actually, I was a couple years younger than her, I think, actually. I was 6 or 7. My parents, my dad and my stepmom had just gotten together. My dad lost a ton of money in the divorce. And so he was broke. And I wrote in my letter to Santa, I think I got it from the Polar Express, that I talked about this with the last episode with Chris. I wanted sleigh bells. I said, "Give me, just cut off a piece of your sleigh bells when you come by the house so that I know you're real." And when I picked up these bells and I picked up this box and that box jingled like this, I about lost my damn mind. So I stood on this and I got these because they have sentimental value. I went, ho, 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 hello. And I did this bit with her. She's so smart. She was taking calls and people asked her whether or not Rudolph's nose was red or green. And she said, well, I don't know. It doesn't say on the tracker, but my theory is that it's red because red light waves travel further than green. And so she, thankfully, I listened to that phone call because I wouldn't have known that information. And so she called, when she asked me, when I called in as Santa, she was like, hey, is Rudolph's nose red or green? I said, actually, I heard you just answer that. And you're absolutely right. It is red. It's a misunderstanding that because green is more sensitive to the human eye, but, you know, up what I'm doing. And so anyway, he gave me the name of their elf on the shelf. And so I said it. And I told him, I said, thanks, man, because I got off the phone and she was very adorable. And then I got to hear after I said goodbye. I said, Merry Christmas. And she said, be safe, which was so cute that she's like, be safe, Santa. She wanted to know when I was coming to her town. I told her about 3 to 4 hours and I told her, please go home because it makes it so much easier. She goes, I will. So after I sign off and go on there, she wraps up the show with her dad. She goes, you heard that, kids. Go home and go to bed because you got 3 to 4 hours before Santa's coming to Southern California. And she goes, and he knew the elf's name, so he's the real deal. And she said, so mall Santas, you better up your game. Which was so adorable. So I walk away, right? I kind of go, oh, this was so great. And I sent my friend Brian a text message, and I said, thanks, man. That was kind of cool for me. And he sent me a text message that made me cry on Christmas Eve. It was so unbelievably sweet. And let me see if he said, he said, I actually cried when you were talking, to his daughter. She kept turning around to look at me in the producer's booth to see my reaction. It was one of the best moments of my life. Thank you. And Merry Christmas. And I saw him in the hallway and he said, dude, he goes, it was so great. It was so incredible. So it's not my kid, but it was a nice moment that I got to have. That reminded me of Christmas and the holiday and what it's all about. And just for the sake of having another quick one with my actual family, we spent a lot of time. Nothing really big happened other than the Jacob building the Legos for 6 hours, which was interesting to watch. And kind of in the tone of what I was talking about in the second segment of the show today is that, you know, we had family members over and, you know, my mother-in-law was here. And so she, you know, she's different minded when it comes to parenting, obviously. And so she wasn't doing a lot, but she wanted to sit there and kind of watch over them. And I wanted them to figure it out because now I'm big on this like kind of struggle thing. I want to make sure that I can give them opportunities to, you know, I'm not going to torture them, but you know, if there's an opportunity that where they can figure it out and work the muscles themselves, that the reward on that is far superior than me going, oh, here's the piece you're looking for every time they can't find something, right? There's a greater long-term reward on that. And so eventually after everybody left, Jacob, he spent probably 3 or 4 hours the first night, and then he woke up by himself at 6:30 in the morning the day after Christmas and immediately went to work on that thing. And after another 2 or 3 hours, he finished this little BB-8, and he's just so happy, like just so stoked. And then he immediately started building his brothers because it was my mom got it for him, and so it was above his age range, and so Jack was fine with it. And so they built a little bit of it together, but then Jack would get bored because he's only 6, and then he'd come back and help his brother. And so there was that kind of stuff. But my favorite part was after the holidays, I mentioned on the show that I kept forgetting to get the flu shot. And so I felt like Dr. J was like my own elf on the shelf in my corner, which, by the way, oh my gosh. Well, I'll say that at the end. I had to get the flu shot. So we go to get the flu shot. Jack freaked out, which was very weird and very crazy, but still back to the point I was saying is that he had to feel that negative emotion so he could learn to deal with it. But eventually got the flu shot. And then we had this fun kind of bonding thing that's never happened before with the family flu shot, where everybody kept commenting on the stiffness in their shoulder and the bruises. And we cuddle a lot as a family. So every time somebody put their head, you go, ow. And then we would giggle and laugh. And I don't know why, but honestly, the flu shot thing really was one of the most kind of magical family things, that sitting around our sweats and playing the games. I really love it. And I wish I could do more of it. So that's the show. Send me an email to show@thedadpodcast.com with whatever feedback, what you think of this show. If you hate it when I do episodes by myself, or A lot of you, whenever I say this, you thankfully send it in and say, oh, I like it. You know, I mean, sure, I couldn't do this all the time like this because it would just be too monotone and too heavy handed. I think it's funny when I have a guest. Oh, and that's the other thing I want to say about having a guest is that I think I'm going to move past and try and find a way to shorten the kind of get to know the guest, because I want you guys to be able to get to know them and where they're coming from. But I think it makes for a better show if we do that quick up front and then get to other stuff. That's the other thing I've learned about the guests. So if you really like it when we have a first time guest on and you want to hear more about like how they got married and how they finally are going to have kids and all that stuff, then my bad and I apologize. But I think what we'll do is we'll find other stories that we can share that we don't have to know their background. That's my new game plan. But anyway, you usually people send in and say nice things. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought there for a second. But what I want you to do is go to the Instagram. If you go to Instagram.com/dadpodcast, or if you already have the Instagram app, it's at dadpodcast on Instagram, and you will see on Christmas night my wife and I tried to, Natalie wanted to take a selfie in front of the Christmas tree because we didn't get our picture in front of our tree this year and the kids were already asleep, and it happened. We instantly became, as I put on there, grandparents figuring out Skype. That picture, when you go to see it, and please give us a follow at Instagram, Dad Podcast on Instagram. That picture is not posed. It was not planned. It was me staring at the thing and clicking a picture, but not knowing the picture had been taken while we're trying to figure out a selfie. And we look like grandparents figuring out Skype. It was so embarrassing and so hilarious at the same time. I think I also put it up at Facebook if you're not an Instagram user, and on Twitter too. If whatever social media account you use, do me a favor. Give us a follow. So we're at Dad Podcast on Instagram. We're at Dad Podcast on Twitter and Facebook.com/Dad Podcast, because we're getting into this world of sponsors and they like to see a social media following. So if you're there, please do it. The other thing I would like to ask is if you just download the episodes individually from iTunes or however you get your podcast, if you could do me a favor and subscribe so they automatically download, that would be a huge help. That would really help out too, because it would make the numbers, I think, balance out a lot more than what they do right now. I think that's it. So don't forget sunbasket.com/dadpodcast for $35 off your first order. And a big thank you to them for joining the show and supporting the show. They're going to be around for the next month. And fingers crossed, another great product coming down the horizon. So please support the sponsors of this show, because it helps them support me. All right. So on behalf of myself, Justin Worsham, hug your kids, hump your loved one, stay frosty.